Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Down goes Tyson. Tyson Foods announcing yesterday it will relocate about 1,000 corporate positions from Chicago, Chicagoland. They have corporate staff in Chicago and Downers Grove. They go. Tyson Foods locating 1,000 corporate positions to its setup in Arkansas. So that's now this year. We got your Boeing.
Oh, that's right.
You got your Citadel. You have your Caterpillar.
Caterpillar, yeah.
And now you have your Tyson's Foods. And, you know, you have comments from Chris Kibczynski, the CEO of McDonald's, another one, moved from Oak Brook to Chicago, of course, saying, yeah, we'd like to hear a plan. We'd like our people to feel like they're safe in the city.
Uh-huh. And instead, our mayor's making goofy videos promoting some Chicago karaoke contest, which pays off $5,000.
Yeah, I think what they're talking about is, I don't know, things like, well, number 44.
Oh, no.
A Chicago man shot and killed two men during a party last week while on bond for attempted murder and on probation for a felony narcotics case. He was carrying a handgun when police arrested him this week in River North. So you can add that to the list. He is the 44th person just this year, say it with me, accused of killing or shooting or attempting to kill or shoot someone in Chicago while awaiting trial for a felony. 82 victims, 21 dead. Just on that piece of it. The what they've done while awaiting trial for a felony.
This year, folks. This is not last year. This is just... since the beginning of this year.
Shot and killed two people while on bond for attempted murder. On bond for attempted murder. The good news...
Did he have his EM on, electronic monitoring bracelet?
The good news for those who enjoy the lawlessness is come January 1, there won't be need to be any bond for the attempted murder. He'll just be out, not on bond. He'll just take a walk on the attempted murder charge.
How the heck does that happen? Again and again and again. I mean, don't these judges see? They tried to kill somebody, and they're not behind bars while they're waiting trial? Or on electronic monitoring and actually being monitored?
You know, second chances.
Oh, that's right.
In addition to the response from Triple Threat to all of this, companies leaving and people dying, you know, that stuff. In addition to what you referenced in terms of her latest karaoke bit.
Did you see that?
Her karaoke-ing Sweet Home Chicago. Yeah, I saw it.
We, if you haven't seen it, we've tweeted it out. She's wearing a silver studdedly decked out jacket and a red scarf, puts on shades. Then a crystal ball starts and she starts singing Sweet Home Chicago while in the mayor's office.
Yeah, and 16th and 70th District Scanner, which is a Twitter handle, had a video of her walking out of some
Walgreens
convenience store. Yeah, yeah, with a case of Modelo. So maybe she knocked back a couple brewskis.
That's what I was
after that.
When I saw that
or before it.
It's just so embarrassing. Who is her PR person? Because I would have, you know, fallen on a landmine before I would have let her do that stunt. Or don't forget the Corona Busters.
Or don't forget this.
I mean, we do have Halloween.
This was the same dance routine what you saw for the karaoke promotion thing. Chicago Sings, by the way, October 5th to the 11th. If you want to participate, I have no idea what it is, nor do I care. But anyway,
oh, I'm joining.
That's
it.
What she's promoting, allegedly. Same strut that you saw for her promotion of Lollapalooza.
Oh, that's right. When she walks in, so there's a set camera angle, and she walks in and does her strut like this. Don't you like it? Am I,
yeah, it's sort of a mini.
Are they doing it right?
It's sort of a mini George Jefferson.
Yeah, and then she walks off camera.
Yeah. Speaking of mini, the other big thing on Triple Threat's plate is tiny houses. Tiny homes could become more than a novelty in Chicago under a new pilot program Mayor Lori Lightfoot's administration envisions to help the housing insecure. When did that phrase? Everything is about secure and insecure. Do you have housing safety? Do you have food safety? I'm food insecure. I'm hungry? I'm housing insecure. I don't have a home?
I'm homeless?
Okay.
I think you're housing insecure right now.
I am. Lightfoot used her annual budget to dedicate $3 million from the city's multi-year Chicago Recovery Plan. Oh, that's a good read. To create affordable housing initiative that uses small homes to house people who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford a stable place to live, or former mayors. It could be really a mayoral retirement community, these small homes, because they're all small people. It could be the public sector Chicago version of Del Webb.
Oh, right.
Yeah, for tiny former mayors. The homes typically are less than 500 square feet. Designs can range from a cabin-like structure with minimal necessities, such as a bed, or a full-blown mini home equipped with a kitchen, living space, and even a second loft-style level within the home. Doesn't that sound exciting?
That's lovely.
You can pull your smart car into your tiny home. So, yes.
Have you ever tried to get in a smart car?
No.
By the way, you won't be able to fit.
So
you'll be eating your knees.
So it's all smart cars and tiny homes.
And singing. We're singing.
A tiny home and a small car or smart car in every driveway.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Marty, Naperville. Hey, Marty.
Smart car. Okay, I got a Mazda. You there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I got a Mazda with a smart car. I got a Mazda 3 that gets 38 miles a gallon. Buddy of mine's got a smart car. He gets 28, and it looks like a dope driving thing. But second of all, he weighs about 300 pounds. Second of all, we stopped this 44 shootings. Very simple. Hey, we closed the borders to Indiana because that's where these 44 are going to get their handguns. Just close the border to Indiana, and there'll be no more shootings.
That's what they say, don't they?
Seems pretty simple to me. Oh. I don't know what the problem is.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe that's not the problem. Yeah, it could be. Thanks for the call, Marty. Craig in Mount Greenwood.
Oh, hey. Good morning, Dan. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, these leftists, they want to get us into these little mini homes. They get us into the little mini cars and all that stuff while they can get these big mansions and estates all over the ocean fronts and lake fronts and everything like that. They fly around in the jets and everything like that. How obvious can you be with these rotten scumbags? They want to basically, they want to destroy us and everything, and they want to just sit on top of the pile.
Thanks for the call, Craig. Yeah, I love getting a lecture from Bill Gates about people buying sprawling estates, a guy who's got like a 65,000 square foot estate on Lake Washington. And
other homes.
No, right. Jeff Berwin.
Hi. Greetings, Dan and Amy. If the Safety Act is not radically changed, you will see the rise of the vigilante sooner rather than later. That's all.
Thanks for the call. Well, right. I mean, if you have one of the examples that we've mentioned several times, what are you going to do if you have somebody trespassing on your property, whether it's home or business, and the only option for the officer is to ask them to leave, to give them a ticket, and then tell you, that's all I can do, so good luck figuring it out. Forcing people into confrontations they don't want to have. Yeah. No, that's right. That's exactly right. And that's what you get when you suspend the rule of law, which is what the Safety Act would do. Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The transgender surgery industry poised to become a $5 billion industry by the end of the decade, according to research by report by Grand View Research, I should say. The sector was valued at $1.9 billion last year and is forecast to expand at a compound annual growth rate of more than 11% through 2030. With insurance companies such as Aetna and Unicare covering some components of these sex reassignment surgeries, well, gender reassignment surgeries, including hysterectomies and ovaryectomies, as well as government support driving the market through Medicare coverage. $5 billion industry, a lot of money to be made. Well, that's what we found out from academics at places like Vanderbilt and University of Wisconsin, thanks to the research by Matt Walsh and others. Yeah, a lot of money to be made. It's exciting, exciting time for these ghouls at research hospitals and associated with universities like the two I mentioned. And maybe that informs some of the zeitgeist in the direction of mutilating children. There's money to be made. Not in Oklahoma, though, where you get leadership from Governor Kevin Stitt. A state allocated $108 million grant to the University of Oklahoma Linked Health System as part of the funding money they got from the feds. However, no money until Oklahoma Children's Hospital stops providing puberty blockers and hormone therapy to children under the age of 18.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. It's not a lot to ask for until 18.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it is a lot to ask for. Now, of course, the flip side is last week you had Governor Newsom in California make California a, come on, you know the phrase, sanctuary state for minors seeking to mutilate themselves.
With or without their parents' permission.
Correct. Well, like abortion. I mean, this is none of your parents' business.
No, no,
this is not
about
a mom and dad's business.
If my child has an invasive procedure, I don't need to know about it.
You don't need to know what your 14-year-old is doing, whether it's an abortion or gender reassignment surgery. You don't need that's none of your. Hey, stay out of it. None of your business. You know, in this state, I was talking to a friend who has a son that's had some mental health issues. Unfortunately, he's doing well.
Thank goodness.
But he was telling me something I didn't know about Illinois. Do you know what the age of essentially independence is when it comes to control over your medical records is in this state?
So in other 18.
Words, so in other words, if you have a 14-year-old, as he did, that has a mental health issue and you want to share his medical records with a potential therapist, for example.
Yeah.
Do you know at what age in this state the parents lose control over that decision-making?
I thought it was 18.
You would think, because that's the age of consent. I think the age of consent here is 17, but 14.
What?
So your freshman is having a mental health issue, and you, mom or dad, mom and dad, whoever, are trying to get him help. And if he doesn't want anybody to see his medical records so that they can provide a proper diagnosis and treatment, then he's in control of that decision. Somebody struggling with a mental health issue, not mom and dad trying to get their son or daughter help for said issue.
He's a minor. He's not capable yet of making those decisions, I don't think, just from raising a few.
I suppose if your 14-year-old can, as she can, get an abortion here, without notifying you, without you having any input on it, awareness of it, then I suppose you could do the same with respect to their medical records, give them dominion over that, too, at the tender age of 14. It's just remarkable. Anyway, just an aside, in case I think people be surprised. I was surprised to learn that. On the trans issue, more detransitioners speaking out, and it's a tough thing. It's a tough thing when you are led down a primrose path to do something so destructive. And this, what you're about to hear from this woman who posted her story, is very difficult to hear. And that's why you need to hear it.
I can't believe this happened. I ruined my life. When you break it down, I decided that I didn't want to be a woman before I had ever even experienced being a woman. I had no idea what being a woman was like because I was a child. And now I feel like I will never entirely know. I want to say that I really feel like some people in the trans community and the trans medicalists and the doctors really, really target the most vulnerable of us. I have borderline personality disorder, and I know for a fact that this is the reason for my transition. It's a very difficult mental illness, and one of the core features is not having any sense of self or identity. And my doctors knew this. I told them, even though they didn't ask, that I had been diagnosed with BPD. And it was all fine to them. I wasn't happy as a girl, so that meant I was a boy and I was trans. And so I just took the cure that was handed to me. I was told that I was being given a cure, and I wouldn't want to kill myself anymore. And it wasn't true. I didn't want to cry in this video, but this is such a hard thing to talk about. I lost a lot of things to this, and I just hope that anyone else who's going through what I went through as a young girl will not be prescribed hormones and surgery because of other things. You know, there are so many mental health disorders that make you hate your body, and the solution isn't to change your body, it's to fix your brain, you know? I just don't want anyone else to ever feel this way. I lost my voice. I lost my chest. I don't know if I'm going to be able to have kids. I feel like no one wants to date me or love me because I'm ruined.
312-642-5600, turkey.pro answer line. What?
I never even got to experience sunk it with me. Her saying that I never got to experience womanhood before they forced this on me.
I'm ruined.
She can't have kids.
I'm ruined.
And that's important to a lot of women.
If you have body image issues, the solution isn't to change your body; it's to fix your mind. What? Nobody wants to wave their pride flag after hearing that. Maybe she can open for Drag Queen Story Hour. Maybe she can go talk to the kids over at Naperville 203, along with their third grade teacher, who likes to push boys on how to act like girls, the pronoun business, and let's go through My Shadow is Pink, about a young boy who likes to wear dresses and who inspires his father to also wear a dress. Wonderful stories, aren't they? Feel good stories. Feel good after hearing that? Is that too graphic? Too difficult to hear? Now tell me again how you won't stand up to the Lavender Bund in your school district, library, General Assembly. I mean, you know who one of the big, the family... One of the families that is the biggest funder of all of this?
Pritzkers?
The Pritzkers. Jennifer Pritzker. Formerly,
she's a Republican.
Formerly Jim.
Yeah.
On again, off again.
What do you mean on again, off again? Like sometimes a Republican, sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes, sometimes
Because you know
he
her.
He transitions away from being a Republican, okay, if you will. Yeah. Dave and Cicero, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, look, I'm going to apologize ahead of time that my comment's on edge. Just listening to this girl speak, I have an emotional reaction to this. This nation, we as a people, we are not going to survive this. Something terrible is going to happen to this country as a result of our lunacy and demented direction. I don't know what it'll be. But you people think you can vote for people to support this stuff and destroy a generation of children? We as a nation are not going to make it. I'm sorry to be so emotional and crazy with that statement, but let's see what happens.
Thanks for the call, Dave.
Well, I'm just worried with all these, you know, clinics popping up at, you know, people who are simply exploring gender diversity, that they're going to be talked into it.
Well, did you heard what she said? I took the solution that was given to me. She was in a bad place. Now she's in a worse place. You're looking to professionals for guidance.
The other side is not going to be easier.
She found out the hard way. Paul and Carrie.
You know, it's strange. I thought the left were telling us that the frontal cortex is not fully developed at the age of 25.
That's only when it comes to committing crimes.
Yeah, according to Judge Evans, because he's a neurologist too, don't you know?
Oh, my bad. So an 8-year-old can consent to gender reassignment. Got it. Okay, it's clear now.
Yeah. Glad we could clear that up for you, Paul. Sure. Gavin Newsom's ready with the Mangalas in California to carve up children. Is that too graphic? What? We don't want to talk about Velma being reintroduced as a lesbian on Scooby-Doo?
Oh, I always thought she was a lesbian.
Yeah, I think that sort of misses the point. I thought this was all fun and celebratory. This is a good time. No?
In Chicago, the marathon, I don't know if you guys talked about this yesterday, but there's a non-binary runner category. 70 people have signed up for it. One being Cal Calmia. They said, this is really exciting. It feels good to choose non-binary in my hometown race. But then all of a sudden during the interview, got concerned that there was no elite or there's no prize money for finishing. It's just a different category. And then got upset because there was no public announcement saying that he feels that they just kind of snuck it in.
Well, that's part of the illness, right? I mean, it's the attention-seeking aspect of it.
First, he was excited, and then towards the end of the interview, he's like, wait, why was this a big public thing? Why are they just telling us now?
This is the social contagion, attention-seeking part of it that helps to explain why somebody goes down this path, because it gets rewarded with attention. And there's something incomplete about that person. And so this is not to ridicule people, as we've said many times. But it is to speak plainly about this, particularly when it comes to children. You're an adult and you want to do this and suffer the consequences. But this whole sort of continuing effort, ongoing effort. And it's been ongoing for 100 years in this country to separate parents from their children. That's what no parental notification is on abortion. That's what the medical records issue that it brought up is. And that's what this is. That's what this, as Dave from Cicero said, lunacy is. It's craziness like a fox for these Marxists that understand a bulwark against them and state power, sovereignty over other people, is the family. It's the family and the church. It always has been, and it always will be, or not. That's how it plays out. And so, to Dave and Cicero's point about where our country goes as we, in some quarters, celebrate this, well, that's what it's going to turn on. Does the family rally around and protect itself from interlopers like these people interlopers at a profit for some of the medical professionals. Do they rally around the church and protect it from interlopers? Or are those institutions destroyed and so is a free society? I'm too heavy at, 6 o'clock in the morning? Too bad.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, just on the trans issue.
Yeah.
This is across the pond in merry old England, which is becoming less merry with each passing day. A pastor's wife named Caroline Farrow, mother of five, was arrested for engaging in a discussion online about gender issues. Take a listen.
I'm not entirely clear, so I don't want to opine and give incorrect information. But I was basically, they have to have a reasonable reason to arrest you. There needs to be a good reason. And the reason that they claimed that they were arresting me was because they needed to seize my electronic devices, which is quite scary because, I've been the victim of some really quite severe harassment a few years ago. There was a website producing death threats, rape threats, threatening my children even. And the police said, we never seize electronic equipment. It has to be terrorism. So, there they are seizing my devices. And they said they had to arrest me in order to seize my devices. Well, okay, if they had to seize my devices, they know I have children. Why don't they issue a warrant, a search warrant, come round and get my devices in the day and invite me in for interview instead of depriving me of my liberty in such an unnecessary and undignified way and in front of my children?
She was previously the subject of a 5-month police investigation, this is 3 years ago, after she was accused of calling a trans woman he on Twitter. 5-month police investigation for that in the UK.
And they seized her electronics?
They combine the marriage of big government and big tech and big orthodoxy. Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Tony Babu is back.
Babala,
Babala, Babala, Babalinsky.
Mr. Babalinsky.
Tony Babalinsky, former business partner of one Hunter Biden. He is the son of the big guy, Mr. 10%.
Yes.
Or the chairman.
Oh.
I've got a new nickname for the big guy, Mr. 10%, President Biden, from Tony Babalinsky. 2 years after his bombshell interview by Tucker Carlson, just weeks before the 2020 election, Babalinsky is back, and he explains why. We'll get to that. But resetting the deck here, Babalinsky's involvement with the Biden family and his knowledge of the role that Joe Biden played in those dealings.
There are hundreds of data points that Joe Biden was acting in a capitalistic term, I would say the chairman. The chairman of J.P. Morgan doesn't take 8 meetings down with the people, analyzing companies. The chairman serves a purpose, right? He's a figurehead. He shows up in meetings, shakes hands, advises, has faith in his team. Effectively, that was Joe Biden's role in the Biden family business ventures and around the world.
The chairman, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Tucker went on to get his reaction to the now infamous voicemail that Mr. 10% dad left for Hunter when the New York Times was doing a profile piece on Hunter's business dealings and raising New York Times even after, being part of spiking it, that story. Pre-election, tried to do a make good, as we talked about in this show when the story came up, by detailing some of the things that Peter Schweitzer had detailed years earlier. the voicemail first, and then Bob Alinsky's translation of it. You remember the voicemail.
Hey, pal, it's Dad. It's 8:15 on Wednesday night. Did you get a chance to give me a call? Nothing urgent. Just want to talk to you. I thought the article, at least the thing on online, is going to be printed tomorrow in the Times, was good. I think it's clear. And anyway, if you get a chance, give me a call. I love you.
Love you, too.
I mean, that's it. That's staggering.
Dad?
The sitting president of the United States. But that's Joe Biden in his own voice telling the American people, I was always well aware of the business ventures my family was involved in. So much so I could tell my son I read a detailed article that has 50 facts in it. Imagine just sitting in a room with national security and the intel agencies with that article talking about corruption, talking about China, talking about the Chinese Communist Party, the Liberation Army of China. Joe Biden is saying, I read that article and you're in the clear, Hunter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Something else Bob Alinsky zeroed in on in his conversation with Tucker on his program is Russia and China. And we have sort of an understanding that the Biden administration sees Russia as a greater threat to global stability and America, probably in that order, than he does or they do the Chinese communists. But on the business dealing side of it, so you know about the relationship between Hunter and the chairman and the entire Biden family, because it's one big criminal enterprise, or at least influencing peddling enterprise. At minimum, it's one big influencing peddling, influence peddling consortium. So you know about the deal with the higher-ups in the Chinese Communist Party and the state-owned Chinese energy company. A lot of detail about that and Hunter's dealings with, again, the upper echelon of the Chinese Communist Party. But what about this? This other piece. Russia. For all of the hand-wringing and saber-rattling about Vlad Putin now, the Biden consortium was very interested, along with their Chinese communist friends, in buying a huge stake in a Russian state-owned energy company called Rosneft, as Bob Alinsky detailed.
The involvement of Hunter Biden and the Biden family with knowledge of a deal that was being struck between CFC buying a $9 billion stake in the U.S.-sanctioned Russian-controlled by Putin energy company, and writing a $9 billion check. They weren't a silent partner and, you know, we're going to put $9 million or $90 million or $900 million. They were buying a $9 billion stake, approximately 14% of Rosneft. Once again, U.S.-sanctioned, Putin-controlled Russian energy company, and Hunter Biden and the Biden family were right in the middle of all of that.
Wow.
America's oligarchs. You know, all people complaining about, legitimately so, expressing concerns, I wouldn't say probably is more accurate than expressing concerns about corruption in places like Ukraine, oligarch-controlled country.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You can also reach us on our text line, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Are the oligarchs in Eastern Europe, including Russia, Eastern Europe and Russia, those oligarchs, they operate so differently than the Biden family does? Do they?
Well, they're making money off the government. I'm surprised that this hasn't been taken down. It's still up on Twitter, this interview.
Why Bob Alinsky came forward again?
I'm coming out now because American people still are being lied to about the facts. Right? Nothing's been done. They're still thinking, oh, that deal never happened, or, you know, Hunter Biden was a troubled child. They're not aware of the tens of millions of dollars, the thousands of, you know, pages of documentation and the facts. The DOJ is claiming they had to couch this. They can't do anything near an election. I don't want to be sitting here in December and they actually indict Hunter Biden
And then the American people are like, why weren't we made aware of those facts? This is crazy. I would have changed my vote for that congressman or that senator or that governor or that attorney general. So that's why I'm coming out now. And as I referenced earlier, I came back from summer travel to find out that the person that was running point on the trove of documents and text messages that were provided to the FBI just suddenly retired and walked out of the building.
Yeah, that was Agent Tebolt. Yeah. Yeah.
Just walked out. After years of investigating, just left. I wonder why.
Speaking of the FBI and elections, past and present, since he's coming forward now, as you heard him say, to remind the American people or inform some of the American people who still don't understand what this family was doing and the implications in advance of this election, since his attempt to do so in advance of the last election was throttled by the D.C. press corps fairly well. The FBI and elections. Tony Bobulinski.
But take three steps back. I mean, this was an extraordinarily close election, which is to say it was determined in real life by a very small number of votes.
Yep. 21,500 votes. I don't think your audience, which is a large one, probably understands or is really thinking about it today. But if you go back to October 2020 and then into the November 3rd election, the election was decided by 21,500 votes. And what does that mean? Three states, Wisconsin, Georgia, and Arizona. The difference between President Trump and Joe Biden was 43,000 votes. If half of those people, 21,500, had voted for President Trump instead of Biden, President Trump would still be in the White House. Now, I'm not arguing for that or supporting that. That is fact based on what was recorded in actual votes. So that election was decided by 21,500 votes in the backdrop of a story that is the most suppressed story in the history of a U.S. presidential election.
So if we now know that that story was suppressed by a federal agency, the FBI, our biggest law enforcement agency, then how did the FBI not affect the election outcome? It sounds like the election was, I'll just say it, rigged in part by the FBI.
It was. It was. So you can call it rigged, you can call it stolen, you could call it suppressed. The American people can call it whatever they want. But the fact pattern is the FBI alone altered history in that election.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line, Mike Southside.
Yeah, Dan, Amy, good morning. I just wanted to say that, you know, I kind of find it suspect that the Biden family is investing in energy companies, which I'm going to assume are mostly oil companies, while at the same time they're pushing the Green New Deal out of the other side of their mouth.
For thee, not for me, Mike. That's the rule.
Yeah.
That's the rule of the oligarch.
That's how they handled COVID, too.
Yeah.
Rules for me, but not for thee. Rules for thee, not for me.
And so federal law enforcement and elections, big tech and elections, too, since he mentioned suppressing. The RNC is looking to file suit against Google for suppressing RNC emails to people who've opted into receiving RNC emails. Rhonda McDaniel explains on Maria Bartiromo yesterday.
We are very seriously looking at how we can sue Google. Google controls 53% of the emails in the United States, and they are suppressing right now Republican get out the vote emails ahead of this election. We know this for the past 10 months, the last 4 days of every month, all of our emails go undeliverable, 0% deliverability. This is outrageous. It is voter suppression by big tech, and we have to find a way to hold them accountable. The RNC is looking to sue. We're hoping to have an announcement soon on that, but this is another reason why we need Republicans to take back the House and the Senate, because we need to find a way to keep big tech's thumb off the scale in our elections and our democracy, because they should not be able to suppress emails that we're sending to people who asked for us to send these emails. They have to opt in, Maria.
If you're skeptical about Republicans' efforts to rein in big tech, well, there's good reason, because they didn't do a very good job when they had control of the government, did they? But it's possible the Supreme Court will intercede here. The Supreme Court has agreed to take up the case of Gonzalez versus Google, which is a lawsuit brought by the family of Noemi Gonzalez, an American woman who was killed in an ISIS terrorist attack in Paris in 2015. The lawsuit alleges Google, YouTube, recommended ISIS recruitment videos to users. And so they should be liable. They should not enjoy the, you know, quote unquote, Section 230 protection from legal liability when it comes to recommended content. And so the Supreme Court may very well weigh in on and provide more detail, set a higher bar for these big tech companies to be indemnified by indemnified for content that's posted by users, particularly if they're in the curation business, which they clearly are. If they're in the editorial business, which they clearly are, with their as everybody knows, the censorious nature of this, particularly based on a viewpoint, the inconsistency of taking down the President of the United States' Twitter account, but leaving up the Supreme Leader of Iran's, for example. Many, many, many examples. So we know this. But anyway, the point is that the Supreme Court may get to this before Republicans ever do. Greg, Jefferson Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Hi, Amy. You know, one of the biggest problems that the Republicans and these people got is, you know, well, Google won't forward our emails. Why is anybody using Google or Gmail?
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't let Google, Facebook, Twitter, and all that be the avenue that you go to get your word out. Why do people, I mean,
well,
I understand.
Well, that's what works, though. I mean, the RNC, they're accusing Google of marking 22 million emails as spam, including right. get-out-the-vote messages. But that's right. where people are. That's why they go there.
Well, people need to go somewhere else. They need to take their dollars, even though they may have to pay for email, and there's numerous services that you can go to, rather than using this free. Everything's free. Nothing's free. You know, Zuckerberg didn't become to be worth several hundred billion dollars by giving away planet Earth. Everything's free. Free, free, free. Nothing is free, and that's the thing.
Yeah.
Don't use those services. Have a good one, guys.
Thanks for the call, Greg. Ben, St. Charles.
Good morning, guys. Like a scene in The Fugitive. Boy, is this guy dirty. Dan and Amy, he is dirty.
The chairman, you mean?
Yes, exactly right.
Yeah.
Sad.
Thanks for the call,
Thank
Vince.
You.
The chairman. Mr. 10%. 10% for the big guy.
I remember all the times, oh, I don't know about any of my son's business dealings. What a joke.
You know,
I mean, they both said it, too, on ABC News.
And Tony Bobulinski made that point. Joe Biden has never been asked, at least publicly, by any member of the D.C. press corps that can get close to him. Did you ever meet with Tony Bobulinski? I mean, Tony Bobulinski doesn't exist. And you know when someone is being ignored by the D.C. press corps in a position like Bobulinski is, with the detailed assertions that he has made, you know when they're being ignored that the press doesn't have a response. The comm shop of the Dem Socialist Party and thus the chairman and his family, they don't have a response. What are they going to say? Yes, but they're going to say no and then go down the rabbit hole. Really? No. Well, what about all this? Because as soon as you start answering questions, then you're going to get a lot more of them. So better to pretend he doesn't exist. Spike the stories as best you can, as they did in advance of the 2020 election and still do to this day. Do your own sort of ass-covering coverage like the New York Times did several months back. And hope it goes away. Hope people don't pay attention. Hope people don't understand. Hope people forget. Frank, Arlington Heights.
Yeah, tends to fall. That's one of the first things I teach kids in economics. There is no such thing as a free lunch, just as your other caller said. But on this issue here with big tech and the Republicans, if they win the Congress and the Senate, are they going to have the guts to use the antitrust laws to be able to go after them? Is there going to be any real substantive reform, reverse of like 1933, that you had in this country? Are we actually going to take apart the progressive state? Even if we have to use antitrust laws to be able to go after them, we need to use whatever we have to be able to change the trajectory of this country. And I hope the Republicans have what it takes to do it, because at this point they're the only alternative, but I really highly doubt they'll do anything.
Thanks, Frank.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Have you seen the gay rom-com Bros yet, produced by Judd Apatow? It's, you know, it's touted as the first gay rom-com in U.S. history or something. Well,
yeah, if you've seen it, call us, 312-642-5600.
And if you haven't...
call us.
If you haven't, then...
Why not?
Call us to explain why you're a homophobic weirdo. Because those are your two choices. You either see the movie or you're a homophobic weirdo. That's according to the lead and the co-writer of the film, Billy Eichner. Here's the trailer for Bros. See if this wets your whistle.
Hey guys, it's Bobby Lieber coming to you from the future home of the LGBTQ Plus Museum. Everyone is really excited and totally getting along.
This happens to be Bisexual Awareness Week, and no one has acknowledged it.
Lesbian History Month was in March. Nobody said a goddamn thing.
Of course, lesbians get a month, and we get a week.
So what's happening? Didn't you guys have an announcement?
This is a little unexpected, but we are in a throuple situation.
You're in a throuple? Let me tell you what's progressive now. Being alone. I love my life. I love my freedom. I love my independence.
That's kind of sad.
That I don't want to be in a throuple. I don't even want to be in a couple.
Bobby, I had sex with that 65-year-old.
Jesus, he's ripped.
I know. It's like they injected steroids into Dumbledore. Oh, my God. That's Aaron. He's very hot.
Gay guys are so stupid.
I know. But we've been smart enough to brand ourselves as being smart.
It's our little secret.
You met a guy?
I don't think I'm his type.
He's like gay Tom Brady.
What are you into? One of these ripped idiots with no opinions?
No, I'd like someone who's physically very frail and won't stop talking.
And I bet he's as intimidated by you as you are by him.
I'm down for whatever.
Yeah, I can do whenever and I can do whatever.
Cool. Whatever, whenever. GIF of Michael Scott dancing.
Office GIF? This person isn't gay.
I need you to be honest with me.
You like these growy, meathead idiots.
Oh, look,
they're fighting.
You like that?
Hey.
I can be tough like what your boys. Like
oh, that's what you like, huh?
Hey, what's going on?
Oh, that's cool. All right. Body to
love. I'm not saying this is being received poorly, even in the gay community, but... Freddie Mercury and George Michael both crawled out of their crypts and demanded that their music be removed from the movie.
Well, Billy Eichner thinks straight audiences are to blame for Bros doing so badly at the box office because, what, it cost $22 million to make and they only grossed $4 million over the weekend, something like that. And it's our fault. It's your fault, Dan, for not going to see this movie.
Yeah. Responded to the film bombing at the box office, imploring, quote, everyone who isn't a homophobic weirdo to go to a cinema to see Bros as soon as possible, because he tells us it's quite hilarious. That's not what I picked up on from the trailer, but okay, sure. Yeah.
But this guy, Billy Eichner, he is a vile creature. If you follow him on Twitter, when Roe v. Wade was overturned, in all capital letters, he wrote, get your fictional, hateful Bible stories and your fake, fictional, religious BS out of our effing lives, F you.
Uh-huh.
Real nice guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's angry. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
And people, even Pete, like Ernest Owens, he's an award-winning journalist, you know, editor-at-large, author about this upcoming book, Gay. He says, as a black queer man, I can personally tell you why I didn't see it in the box office. Because Billy Eichner is obnoxious and corny as hell.
Yeah, he went on to say, the straights didn't go see Jiggly either. Oh, perhaps the movie wasn't giving. Yeah, right. Perhaps... You know, just a thought. Perhaps it's just an awful movie. Another gay critic declaring that bros bombing at the box office is a failure of ego. Billy Eichner is a B-list star, not a leading man. Nobody's going to theaters to watch a random rom-com in 2022. For Billy to assume it would be a blockbuster just because he's gay and quote-unquote funny is pure Hollywood narcissism. And other critics have noted in response to Mr. Eichner that other films about gay men like the Birdcage and Brokeback Mountain perform quite well. So it probably has a lot less to do with homophobia and the straights out there in middle America, which is what he's complaining about, and a lot more to do with the quality of the work. Certainly that was my read based on the trailer. It's tough to do comedy, particularly these days. And the that critic Ernest Owens, who talked about corny, yeah, that trailer is nothing but cornball. Yeah. Carlos Hoffman Estates, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Listen, I don't even want to watch straight rom-com.
Exactly. Last good rom-com you saw? It's tough. That's a tough question, I would say.
What about you? You're the movie.
I also, like Carlos and Hoffman Estates, I also despise the genre of rom-coms. They're almost all awful.
Crazy Rich Asians. I was pretty good. Popular rom-coms. How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Oh, brother.
You didn't like that one?
Unwatchable.
Oh. Kate Hudson and Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, God.
No, that was good.
I agree, Mr. Chairman.
No, that was a good one. Come on, you must like some rom-com. Think.
I'm really trying to search the recesses here.
The Proposal?
The Proposal.
Sandra Bullock?
Sandra Bullock is just a terrible actress.
Oh, I don't
She's
think
a
so.
Terrible actress.
No.
Even Bird Box, which was, you know, like no, terrible. Terrible in... I can't think of a movie that
Blindside.
She was good in.
She was good in Blindside.
No, she wasn't.
She won an Oscar for it.
So what? A lot of, they give Oscars out like
great.
They give Nobel Prizes out these days. It has nothing to do with talent or even performance.
Come on, you got to like some rom-com.
She's a terrible, terrible actress.
Bridesmaids? That was funny. That was... God, you're tough this morning. There's got to be one rom-com that you like.
Wrong.
Come on, marry me. Come on.
Top Gun. Yeah. Oh, they.
Is that a rom? That's not a rom-com.
Well, actually, it was the first gay rom-com.
Oh, hey,
the original Top Gun.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maverick and Goose.
Uh huh.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
And Iceman.
What about?
You've heard Quentin Tarantino's review. We played it on this show.
Yeah, I know.
Come to the gay side. That's what that was the underlying allegorical meaning. Uh-huh.
When Harry Met Sally? Sleepless in Seattle? Come on.
I mean, would you consider Happy Gilmore a rom-com?
No.
Well, what was it then?
Comedy. Gilmore?
Well, he had the love interest of the chick that worked on the tour.
But every movie has a love interest.
Well, there's six plots.
I know. Okay.
You know, so it's got to fit into one of them. When Harry Met Sally was pretty good. That's a long time ago.
I know, but it was good.
What do you think? I'm hesitant to say it.
Just say it. Say it.
What do you think about the breakup with Vince Vaughn and Jennifer Aniston?
Oh, look at you.
You know, because that was when.
And they had two different endings too.
That was when Vince Vaughn could still hit the fastball.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
That was a good one. I went to
their
movie premiere. That was a great
Well, of course.
No, as a reporter. No, it was on Southport at the Music Box.
Roll out the red carpet. Jacobson's here.
No, and you know what they said? Because it was the day that Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt gave birth to the baby. And the lady...
Before he started choking out his kids?
Stop. That's not fake news, I think.
Probably.
And
I repeat whatever's in Page Six.
The publicist came out and said, if any of you ask about the baby, you'll be yanked from the red carpet. And I was just happy not to be covering a murder that day. And I was, you know, and I'm like, I won't ask, I swear to God. But Jennifer Aniston was beautiful, and she was so gracious, and everybody just yeah. wrap their arms
okay.
around
all
her.
All right. I mean, this is why I was hesitant to mention it, because I knew I was going to hear some Chicago, cheeseball Chicago angle from you and your celebrity friends.
No, they invited me to the after party. It's fun.
Bill LaSalle
They
County.
Really weren't dating, by the way, Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn. That was...
Oh, that's also fake news?
Yeah.
They never dated?
That was...
They went to a Cubs game. Oh, that was in the movie.
That was in
Did
the
they
movie.
Actually go to a Cubs game, too?
I don't know. I think that he was...
They never dated? Wait a second. Hold on. We got breaking news. Hold on a second.
That was...
Hold on.
Oh, my God.
All right. All right. Tell Gallagher we're going to have to push him back an hour. Wait. You're telling me they never dated?
That was just a cover. Because she was hurting, and they wanted to make it look like she's on the mend. So, use the co-star that she was making a movie with.
Well, why didn't they say she was dating Jon Favreau? No. Or was he married at the time? I don't know.
I think he was married at the time.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm. That was acting. I'm sure they were friends. They seemed friendly
with each
other.
I was available in Chicago when they were filming here.
But you didn't get invited to the after party.
I didn't get invited to anything.
Hmm.
My record is perfect on that score.
You'll get nothing and like it.
Bill in LaSalle County.
Hey, what about The Wedding Singer, Dan, as a rom-com movie?
Yeah, thanks for the call. I mean, you know, again, it's what Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler, right?
Yeah.
I don't like Adam Sandler's movies generally, but he has...
He's gotten better over
the years. He's accidentally done a couple of good ones. Wedding Singer's pretty funny. Happy Gilmore, which I mentioned, was good. Also, you know where he was really good, actually? It's funny. Some of these guys that are supposed to be really funny that really aren't that funny, like Robin Williams.
Yeah.
They're better in dramatic roles. You know where Adam Sandler was really good?
What?
Did you ever see Punch Drunk Love?
I have not seen that.
Yeah, well.
Is he good?
Because, you know, if you're not a part of the art community, artistic community like
yeah,
I am.
Yeah, I know.
Punch Drunk Love.
Okay. I loved Wedding Crashers. Loved that movie. That was a good one.
Yeah. Wedding Crashers. Well, that's what I said. Why I was thinking Vince Vaughn when he could still hit the fastball.
I can't believe you even watched The Breakup. That's so cute.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's what I do on a Saturday night. I'll curl up on the couch, wrap myself in an Afghan, get a gallon of Haagen-Dazs, and watch a rom-com. That's what I do. People want to know what I do. That's my deal.
But you're out there spreading fake news.
Well,
lies.
Right. Well, yeah.
Misinformation.
Right. When I'm not promulgating racism and homophobia disinformation and destroying our democracy, I need to take a break.
You're my racist homeless friend.
I do that during the week. Then I have some me time on the weekends. But Punch Drunk Love, by the way, I think that may have been... If it wasn't his, was it his first movie? Or maybe it was his breakup movie, Paul Thomas Anderson.
Oh.
Yeah, really good. All right, at least you got one good movie recommendation out of all this mess.
Tony
Southside.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. You know, generally I don't watch rom-coms, but every once in a while my wife will suck me into one.
Yeah.
And I do got to admit that 51st Dates with Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore was pretty damn funny.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Rob Schneider is Ula. And, you know, you got Alan Covert as 10 Second Tom and Sean Astin as Doug Whitmore, the steroid dude. I mean, that was a funny-ass movie.
You're laughing about it now just thinking about it. Yeah. All right.
Check it out.
Thanks, Tony. Yeah, I saw it.
I met Drew Barrymore, too.
I like Rob. Oh, of course you did.
Well, I was on Trump's 737, the Trump plane.
You were her body
with
doubling.
Bill Rancic, and she was getting on her private plane at Midway and leaving, and we were waving at each other.
And people don't know you were her body double in Poison Ivy.
Exactly.
And in E.T.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I was little, with the pigtails.
Yeah, you're so cute at that age.
Oh, so sweet.
What was I just thinking about?
I don't know.
Because
I just
Sandler.
Went on my little...
Adam
Punch
Sandler,
Drunk Love. Barrymore. Let's go backwards. You're homeless.
homophobic weirdo Jim in St. Joe, Michigan.
Dan, I used to be a homophobic weirdo, but man, since you played that trailer, I gotta go see that movie.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's pretty.
Yeah.
All right.
Here's a good.
We'll save the aisle seat for you there, Jim. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a good rom-com movie. Return to Me, filmed in Chicago.
Oh, that's with...
Amy, did you ever see that? That's a good movie.
Weren't they at Acres, or what's that place called?
Twin Acres.
Twin Acres. Yeah, wasn't that shot at Twin Acres?
No, it was shot actually downtown in Chicago. In fact, the bar they use that she works at that her grandfather and uncle owned. My wife and I drove past it. It's a good movie. It's with Minnie Driver. Duchovny. I think it's Carol O'Connor's last movie. It's a real good movie.
Right.
I won't tell you the plot, but it's not bad.
Don't tell me how it ends.
And also, you know, Jim Belushi, because if it's filmed in Chicago, Jim Belushi has to have a bit role in it. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yep.
Thanks,
yep.
Thanks for the call.
Belushi's in it, really?
Yeah, he's in it.
Oh, I thought you were joking.
No. I like Minnie Driver.
Belushi or Murphy.
I like Minnie Driver as an actress.
You should have dated her when she was here making the movie.
She was
at East Bank Club, but I'm not going to...
So many missed opportunities for these Hollywood stars. Oh, were you on the,
sorry,
the bikes with Minnie Driver at East Bank Club? You're like Forrest Gump. Wherever there's a celebrity, Amy's somehow there. I mean, because she's a fellow celebrity, of course, is what I mean.
Because, you know, because I was in the biz.
No, of course, you're in the biz. I mean... Everybody knows about your acting chops.
I was in a movie.
Anybody who's seen U.S. Marshals, you won an Oscar for that, didn't you?
And I just got a check from Warner Brothers. Here it is.
Let's see.
Okay.
Man, the residuals just keep pouring in.
$12.90. That won't even pay for a parking spot in Chicago.
How many millions have you made from U.S. Marshals?
You know, one time I got a check for 3 cents. It was 5 cents, but after taxes. I've made, you know... Well, I mean, checks like this.
Do you stay in touch with Tommy Lee Jones since you guys were...
together for 12 hours?
Yeah, you were the love interest in that, right?
No, I was questioning him.
Didn't you make out with Tommy Lee Jones?
No, I made out with somebody else.
Oh, Edward James Olmos.
Oh, please.
I always get those two confused.
Okay, can you stop?
Just Castillo.
Stop. Yeah. You tried to get him on the show once
for something. Why not?
Behind my back.
Why not?
Because it's embarrassing.
Rekindle past loves.
Okay. It was a mistake.
Yeah.
When I worked at Channel 5, they put his 8x10 picture on my windshield to make fun of me.
As they should have.
Yeah, Mike McGovern. You're funny, Mike. I love you, Mike.
George in Will County.
Hey, what about Hitch? Please tell me you've seen Hitch.
I have seen Hitch, and all right, this may disappoint you, George, if you liked Hitch. First of all, it's unwatchable. Will Smith and Kevin James are both terrible. And Kevin James is, I mean, I like King of Queens and I like some of his stand-up, but it just doesn't translate on screen. Speaking of terrible, how about when they pretended to be gay firefighters, him and Adam Sandler? How unwatchable was that movie? Let me tell you something about Will Smith, George, and you can feel free to disagree.
All right, here we go.
I won't think any less of you. Will Smith is not a leading man. Will Smith cannot carry a movie by himself. It's the same thing I used to say about Mark Wahlberg, but there's some exceptions there. But Will Smith is not a leading man. His movies, name a great Will Smith movie.
The one where he's homeless with his son.
Pursuit of
Happiness. That's a good one.
That's Pursuit of Happiness is one. I'll give you another one. I'll offer up.
You're ripping on him now. You're saying he's good.
And an ensemble. Enemy of the State with Gene Hackman.
Also good
in that. That's it. George, what do you say? No? George?
No, I am. Can you hear me?
Oh, hey. What happened to George?
There you go.
Oh, there he fell down a well. Okay, come back.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, George.
I said, I am, when he was all, you know, left alone all by himself, him and his dog.
Oh, yeah. That was laborious to get through. Yeah. I don't know. You know,
but what about King Richard? He was great in King Richard, and he won an Oscar for it, didn't he? Yeah.
Well, then he slapped Chris Rock.
And now it's over.
Yeah.
And now he's banned for 10 years.
All right. Thanks for the call, George.
No, King Richard was good. You have to admit that. That was a great movie.
I will reserve judgment. I have not seen King Richard yet.
Oh, you need to. And then Concussion.
Concussion, he was good. Also ensemble cast, he was good in Concussion. I agree with that.
Remember I bought you that DVD years ago for Christmas?
Yeah.
That was a really nice Christmas gift.
Oh, it was wonderful.
But you
liked
the
wonderful.
Steelers, so I thought, you know, it was about the Steelers, and it was a
sort of
based
Mike
on
Webster.
A true story.
Yeah, right. No, it was good. He was good in that. That's three out of, you know, 50.
I've seen a lot of Will Smith movies now.
Tim in Lakewood.
Another Vince Vaughn movie, Couples Retreat.
Terrible.
Terrible.
Oh, no.
I mean, that was unwatchable.
No, not even close. And I like Jason Bateman. Not even close.
We walked out of, I was with a group of people. We walked out of the theater and demanded our money back.
Ralph and Rantoul.
Hey, good Good morning. Hey, I bet you almost couldn't appear on the show because he was out getting dermabrasion.
Oh my God!
Hey, my hit.
Wow.
My hit would be High Plains Drifter, because you had that midget Billy Barty guy. He had a man crush on Clint, largely observed from afar, windows under the porch through fire, and then Clint's love interest was that blonde whose name I don't know. It was brief, but it was intense. And then he painted the town red and he got the heck out of there.
No, I recall it. I don't know if that fits into the rom-com. Nice try trying to shoehorn High Plains Drifter into the rom-com category, Ralph. Very good. But no, I don't think so. I don't think it's in that category. And that's what I'm going to do when I leave Chicago. I'm going to paint the whole town red and write hell on the welcome to sign. Coming up at 7:07, John Hindraker.
That's inciting violence.
Who owns science? John Hindraker will tell us at 7:07.
But now into the newsroom we go. Mike Scott, what's your favorite rom-com?
When Harry Met Sally.
Thank you.
However, worst Will Smith movie ever,
what?
Wild Wild West.
Yeah.
It doesn't
also
even
terrible.
Come close.
Yeah, also
terrible.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I cannot believe how many of our listeners have very strong opinions on rom-coms. The feedback we're getting.
Our text line is blowing up.
We've got some other suggestions. Love Actually, Mad Dog and Glory. Those are both pretty good.
I got a great one. Only the Lonely.
That was
the
great.
The picnic scene at the old Comiskey Park just before it was torn down that came from us, from Bob from Buffalo Grove.
You know who was great in Only the Lonely? I know John Candy. He was. Ally Sheedy, she was. Maureen O'Hara as John Candy's mom. Yeah, she was awesome. That's a good one.
Okay, I'm going to write that down on my list.
That's actually not, you know, the typical treacly rom-com. That was actually really
a thoughtful one.
Really poignant. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that is good. I like that. I'm going to go see that again. I'm going to rent that.
This is where I leave you.
Yeah, have a good
Bateman,
cry.
The lead, excellent movie.
And then Ralph and Rantoul opened up a whole new avenue when he tried to fit High Plains Drifter into the rom-com category. So now we've got, you know, people saying Fatal Attraction.
Oh.
That was funny. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was a real hoot.
In a certain way.
I love that one.
Deliverance, of course.
Oh, I mean, that's just
love
so romantic,
story.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll have to revisit the rom-com stuff. We've got to get to serious business. But perhaps a budding rom-com could be based on the relationship between Joe Biden and Ron DeSantis.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's just guffawing over the fact that they didn't come to blows when the big guy, Mr. 10%, the chairman, visited Florida.
Well, this was the full Monty. I mean, the storm surge that you saw through here met the expectations, the highest expectations, and you've seen what significant damage that can do. So I'm just thankful that everyone's banded together. We've got a lot of work to do here, but I'll tell you, the spirit of the people of this state and Southwest Florida has been phenomenal. When I'm meeting with people that have lost everything, that are 85, 90 years old in shelters, and all they can do is thank the Red Cross, the fire, the state, FEMA, for all the support. That shows you some of these folks. They are thankful that they have so many people that are there supporting. And that's really, you only get there if it's a team effort. So, Mr. President, welcome to Florida. We appreciate working together across various levels of government. And the floor is yours.
Oh, my God. There wasn't a cat fight.
And
oh.
They kissed.
Well, they made out, yeah.
So he was on point. DeSantis talking about the response to the natural disaster, and Biden was on politics.
Colorado River looks more like a stream. There's a lot going on. And I think the one thing this has finally ended is a discussion about whether or not there's climate change and we should do something about it.
Debate's over. Hurricane Ian has ended the debate on climate change and what we should do about the natural state of affairs of the climate changing.
But he's so off topic. I mean, people don't care about that right now. They care about getting their homes back and their, you know, items back and their livelihoods back.
Climate change.
There's a place and time for that. That was not the place and time.
Yeah, the debate is over. As the Wall Street Journal opined on this, for example, these people are always declaring that scientific debate is over. It was initially dismissed as tinfoil hat lunacy to wonder if the COVID-19 virus might have leaked from a Chinese laboratory. Shortly thereafter, Experts with scientific standing acknowledge that is a real possibility to be discussed in earnest. It's a bad sign when one side of the political debate demands to cut off the microphones of the people on the other, and the tech censors these days are almost uniformly progressives. Yeah, aren't they? Aren't they? On climate change, the disinformation tag gets liberally applied to even people who agree that it's real, caused by fossil fuels and a problem, but who also think humanity can adapt. Apocalyptic predictions are overwrought, or subsidies for green energy are a poor investment. Well, that kind of nuance has no place in the debate. That's now over. And the reason it's over is because the new Marxists are science. Tony Fauci is science. Melissa Fleming, the Undersecretary for Global Communications at the United Nations, they own science.
You know, we partnered with Google, for example. If you Google climate change, you will, at the top of your search, you will get all kinds of UN resources. We started this partnership when we were shocked to see that when we'd Googled climate change, we were getting incredibly distorted information right at the top. So we're becoming much more proactive. We own the science, and we think that the world, you know, should know it, and the platforms themselves also do. But again, it's a huge, huge challenge that I think all sectors of society need to be very active in.
Yeah, going to have to be a lot of silencing of dissent. John Hindraker joins us. He's president of the Center of the American Experiment and contributor to Powerline Blog, powerlineblog.com, which is a daily must-read. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, great to be with you, Dan.
It's their science. Keep your grimy hands off their science, John.
Yeah, well, of course, as we know, Dan, science is a method. It's not a body of dogma. Anyone can perform science, engage in scientific analysis, but they don't want to hear that. And you know, one of the ironies here, you can talk specifically about global warming, but it's true of COVID and other topics. The whole global warming hysteria is premised not on observation. So just to take one example, there's no long-term trend toward hurricanes getting worse or more frequent. There just isn't. So that's complete nonsense. So the whole global warming hysteria, it's not based on observation, it's based on models. But one thing we know for sure, because we have enough decades now of observation to check them against reality, is that the models are wrong. The models greatly overestimate the impact of carbon dioxide on global temperatures. And so this is a debate that has been raging now for a number of years, and the alarmists have lost that debate. They've just flat out lost it, and so they're doing what a lot of people want to do when they lose an argument, and that is turn to censorship.
And in some countries, as we're seeing, we're talking about it a little bit earlier in the show, the turn to censorship in countries that are slightly less free than the United States, like Britain, gets you a visit from police if not arrested. We had another incident in the UK just the other day where a woman was arrested for repurposing memes in the context of a debate about, you know, transgender and whether men can identify in women as vice versa. But they were, you know, basically just the typical, you know, what you are, the sex that you're assigned at birth kind of statements, nothing derogatory or incendiary, just a fundamental disagreement on, you know, the cultural aspect of it.
We're seeing this across a range of issues. But one of the things that's really scary, Dan, is that the left is attacking free speech here in the United States, but they're doing it most effectively not directly through the government, but through private parties. And so I was kind of stunned when I read that quote from the UN official, Melissa Fleming, that you played the audio of, and I thought, can that really be true? But it is true. If you Google the phrase climate change, Google has completely altered its normal algorithm. So it used to be that if you Google climate change, you'd see all kinds of stuff. You'd see the material on all sides of the climate debate. That's not true anymore. Google has now suppressed all dissenting voices on the main page, the main search results. So if you Google climate change, what you will see is a sort of customized page that consists entirely of pro-global warming propaganda from the United Nations, from the U.S. government, and so forth. And if you and they bring up images of several people, and the first image you see is Greta Thunberg. You know, Google serves her up to you.
Leading scientist. Yeah.
And this is really, really sinister. And so we're seeing this in conjunction with efforts on the social media platforms, preeminently Twitter and Facebook, to just suppress any scientific discussion or debate about these issues. And it is really one of the most sinister things going on currently here in the U.S.
So the left owns the political war, and they own the narrative on climate change now.
Well, it's unbelievable. You know, I wrote a post about this, and I quoted some other things, too. And by the way, the World Economic Forum is now partnering with the UN, and they're sinister. You know, they're every bit as bad as the United Nations. Yeah, but I quoted a couple things from this World Economic Forum on disinformation, which is where the Fleming, you know, had the quote that you played the audio of. And the head of the World Economic Forum was quoted praising CNN. I'll just quote what he said here. He said, CNN is both an organization that's trying to make sense of the world and trying to establish the facts. Dubious. He goes on, it's also part of a political war on who owns the narrative. Well, that's true. You know, that's kind of a moment of honesty there. But these institutions, the United Nations, World Economic Forum, most, if not all, of the United States government and most other governments around the world are engaged in what they call a political war. And what they want to do is to, quote, own the narrative and, quote, own the science. And what that means is to suppress not only opinions other than theirs, but facts that are inconvenient.
Yeah, they don't want, Klaus Schwab and the boys at the World Economic Forum don't want anybody other than them to own anything abstract like a right or concrete like property. It's a very interesting world they're conjuring up for themselves. Speaking on the topic of free speech, what do you want Elon Musk to do with Twitter? Because I've got an idea. Let me run this by you.
I want to hear it.
I'd like him to gift it to his ex-wife, Tallulah Riley. per these text messages that she sent to him, can you buy Twitter and then delete it, please? Please do something to fight wokeism. I will do anything to help.
I love her.
What do you think about that?
That is so awesome. And the thought occurred to me, I mean, did Elon Musk spend $44 billion to please his ex-wife, whom he's been divorced from twice? It's so, you know, that is quite a gesture.
Yeah, wouldn't it
I've
be?
Never heard of her, to be honest, but I love those texts. I suppose it's the end of her acting career to the extent she has one.
Well, she's in Westworld. She plays alongside Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump, who are also in Westworld. Ivanka Trump. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. You know, and one of the reasons why the left is so hysterical about Musk buying Twitter is that when you engage in censorship, you've got to plug the dike, right? You can't afford leaks. And so you wind up hysterically going around. You've got to cover the whole waterfront so that the truth doesn't leak out. And so if Twitter is in the hands of somebody who's not committed to this leftist censorship, that's a big problem for them because everybody's going to flock to the place where you could actually learn something. And so that's why they're so hysterical about it. It's why they hate Fox News. They control everything except Fox News. But that exception is critical because that means it's a place where people can go and they don't just hear the narrative. They hear actual news. Same thing with Twitter. By the way, Dan, all these Twitter employees who are threatening to quit, please do.
Yeah,
just do it.
Right. I mean, they're going to need to shed some of that overhead because that business model doesn't really work. I mean, Hellman Jenkins had a good piece the other day about this. It's such an odd thing. So now you have essentially a owner of a company that you don't want who doesn't want to be the owner of your company. That's going to make for a very interesting corporate culture.
Well, the corporate culture could only improve.
Yeah, I suppose.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, and I like your idea. Give it to his ex-wife and let her run it. I think that's genius.
All right. Hopefully, maybe I'll tweet and see if Elon Musk picks up on it. John Hinderaker, president of the Center for the American Experiment, contributor to PowerlineBlog.com. John, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Have you seen this? Speaking of the overarching state, as we were discussing with John Hinderaker.
Mm-hmm.
In New York City, a new bill would invite residents to submit photos of cars blocking bike lanes,
yeah,
schools, and sidewalks, and then receive 25% of each $175 ticket.
Oh, so you can pay to be a snitch.
The lives of others. Yeah.
If it saves one life. Yeah, come on.
Right.
If it saves one
divvy. Yeah. Uh-huh. So,
what?
Well, yeah.
So you just take a picture of the car that's blocking a bike lane and then they're going to reimburse you?
When they're going to give you 25% cut of the $175 ticket.
Oh, that could be a full-time job for some people.
Well, that's sort of the point, isn't it? I mean, $43 a ticket. You know, you go around snapping photos all day in a congested place like New York City, or at least it used to be before everybody moved out of Manhattan. You know, that's real money, real side hustle there. That's going to engender a lot of goodwill among New Yorkers who are already, renowned for their goodwill.
Yes.
Yeah.
Such a friendly place.
And as we know, if it's proposed in New York or L.A., then it's going to make its way to Chicago post-haste. So look for one of your alder wardens on the city council to be introducing this, too. I'm sure that it's whistleblowers, public safety deputies, and so on and so forth, as if these bike lanes in particular. So blocking.
You don't like the bike lanes, do you?
But I don't
I'm
even know
a
what
cyclist.
That, I don't even know what that means, blocking schools, cars blocking schools. How does a car
does
block a
mean?
School? But okay, blocking bike lanes and sidewalks, I get that, I suppose.
Well, we're different than New York because in Chicago, you know, during the school hours, no one can park on that side of the school. I mean, we have signs up. People don't do it. But in New York, I guess they do. I don't know. I don't feel like snitching on people like that. You know, they could just be running into the store. They've been having a bad day, whatever. It's not something that
would
be part of.
Their bad day?
Yeah.
Can help make yours a good day. Huh? Let's all be parasites. Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So OPEC's cutting oil production by 2 million barrels a day. And Biden's response is to release 10 million more barrels from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. In other words, 1 week's worth of what is being cut.
Wow.
By the OPEC plus countries. Yeah, this is not going swimmingly, in case you were unaware. And something else, too, at the state level. In states like Illinois, where you have, for some reason, trade unions in the road building business aligning with these anti-growth green cranks in office, like the governor of this state. You can't build roads without oil, dum-dums.
Can't do anything without oil.
Jacob Borden, who is a professor of chemical and bioprocess engineering at Trine University. So the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act of 21 allocates $110 billion to build and repair roads and bridges. And this is all infrastructure. Oh, okay. The Inflation Reduction Act spends hundreds of billions on renewable energy with the ultimate goal of eliminating fossil fuels. So how are we going to build roads without oil? 94% of U.S. road miles are paved with asphalt, which constitutes the bottom of the bottom of the oil barrel. We don't refine oil merely to make asphalt. It's the byproduct left behind in the process of making fuel, and it isn't the only one. 70% of the volume of each barrel of oil is used for combustion. The other 30% materially contributes to almost every other consumer product on the shelf. Petroleum coke is the main source for the anodes used in aluminum smelting. The same goes for BTX, which stands for benzene, toluene, and xylene. BTX is the refinery stream used to make the polymers, plastics, resins, and solvents that contribute to everything from the sheath on electrical wires and cell phones to catheters, IV bags, and pill casings. Except for jeans and wool suits, almost all clothing is at least partly synthetic. So why the hell are we letting people prattle on with these, I guess, acceptable lies that are so unacceptable? These paradoxes. $110 billion to build and repair roads and bridges, and then hundreds of billions more to eliminate fossil fuels. You're going to build roads without oil? How are you going to do that? Does anybody ask that question? Simple question.
Yeah, it's not hard.
That's why Dan Henninger writes in the Wall Street Journal, you know what Putin's best weapon is? It's not nukes. You know what his best weapon is? Bidenomics, the economic policies in this country. As he writes, there's another weapon that could wear down the West's will to continue the necessary fight. A world in recession led by United States that has forsaken pro-growth economics. It's time to recognize that spending money on the climate has become such a consuming obsession for the Democratic Party that it's putting at risk the recovery of the U.S. economy and our national security. For the Democrats, saving the planet, Henninger writes, is World War III, IV, and V. No issue or reality, including Putin's threat to use tactical nukes in Ukraine, will deter them from demoting every other priority to achieve their climate goals. Virtually everything they've done over the last 2 years has been targeted at the climate, climate-related infrastructure outlays, increased transfer payments, or the $500 billion student debt write-off. The pay-fors come primarily through higher taxes. It's difficult to identify any initiative meant to unlock the post-pandemic energies of the broader U.S. economy. And things get bad, and the appetite for arming the Ukrainians to fight would understandably dwindle. So what's the best weapon? What's the best weapon in addition to pro-growth policies to approach Putin's nuclear threats? For more on that question, we're pleased to be joined by Jakob Griegel, professor of politics at the Catholic University of America, visiting fellow at the Hoover Institution as well. Professor Griegel, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Good to be back.
So for the best way to combat Putin's nuclear threats from a diplomatic or geostrategical perspective, in addition to the economic one I was carrying on about, what say you?
Well, one of the answers is that if Putin threatens to use nuclear weapons, we respond. We in the U.S. respond to that use of Russian nuclear weapons. I think that's incredibly dangerous for obvious reasons. We engage directly now with Russia, and from then to a nuclear war between the two superpowers, or two nuclear powers, it's a pretty short step. So I think the best way is to continue what, to a certain degree, we've been doing now, namely to keep arming the Ukrainians, but up the supplies of weapons, in particular to give them certain weapons, conventional weapons, that would allow them to respond by striking targets in Russia. So longer-range missiles, at a certain point, also a more capable air force, which they've been asking for, and a few other weapons. I mean, the point is that, nuclear threats are serious. We should always take them seriously, even if they come from somebody like Putin, perhaps even more so. He is not crazy. He's a very calculating tyrant, and he doesn't say things without a certain calculus behind them. So when he threatens to use nuclear weapons, I think we should take them seriously. The question is, should we do nothing? That's dangerous, too. You know, one of the problems in politics, and I guess in daily life, too, is that there's always a cost with any action that you pursue. The question is, which one has the least cost and the least risk? And I think the least costly and the least risky is the one to continue arming Ukrainians with conventional weapons.
Well, what's your handle on where the situation stands? I mean, is this 13 days in October? Is that what you think is where we're at?
Well, not yet. I don't think so. I mean, the big difference is that the situation on the ground is different, right? It's Ukrainians are winning on the battlefield right now, and especially over the past few days and few weeks. Their counteroffensive in the south and southeast has been remarkably successful. So that's different because the facts on the ground are changing. And the 13 days in October, the facts on the ground were not changing, right, or fixed.
Well, right. I mean, so one could argue that it's with what's happening in Ukraine to Russian forces, to Putin's forces, makes it even more destabilizing than the situation with the Cubans back in this, you know, back in 61.
Yeah, perhaps. But, you know, one of the things is that you have to look at also from the Russian perspective. If they use nuclear weapons now when they're losing and the Ukrainians have this enormous desire to win and, frankly, to seek revenge at this point, I'm not sure that the effect of a nuclear weapon will be as successful from a Russian perspective as we think it is. To give you an example, assume that the Russians use a nuclear weapon. I'm not sure the Ukrainians will stop. I think the Ukrainians will have actually even a bigger desire to continue pressing forward despite the casualties. So I don't know if the calculus is as easy as we think it is from Putin's perspective. In fact, in the past 2 days, Putin has strikingly changed his rhetoric. He used to say for essentially decades now, for 20 years that he's in power, especially the past couple of years, the Ukrainians are inferior, they're not a nation, they are sort of like almost like a sub-nation that either needs to be incorporated into Russia or, frankly, annihilated. Well, over the past 2 days, he said something different. 2 days ago at the press conference or an interview, he said that he has great respect for the Ukrainian nation. That's kind of, I don't know, striking. So it tells me something that he is now reconsidering certain rhetoric and perhaps reconsidering certain calculus. So, again, who knows? It's a big question mark, but that's due, in my view, in large measure to the changes on the ground, on the battlefield.
Cuban Missile Crisis in 62, not 61. Yeah. I misspoke. Want to correct the record.
I don't know how you're going with your day.
I want to embarrass myself in front of the professor.
All right, so what's happening with the area that Russia allegedly annexed after that sham referendum?
Well, they officially, illegally, but officially annexed it. But, you know, parts of the area is not in their hands. It's actually under Ukrainian control, and in fact, the Ukrainian control is expanding in that area. So it's sort of annexing lands that you're losing, which is somewhat unique in history. In fact, a couple of days ago, after the official vote in Moscow for an annexation, they even stated that the borders are still not fixed. Namely, they annexed territory that they did not draw on the map clearly. So again, it's an opening to say, well, we may not need the entire region. We can draw the line of whatever we annexed somewhere else. Again, my view, it could be just chaos, but in my view, it's also an opening to some sort of negotiation. Essentially, we don't need both regions in the administrative borders that they had on the map. We can have it, well, let's see how the battlefield goes, right? So there are some signs that the Russians are reading the situation on the ground and adjusting their political and diplomatic posture.
How do you interpret the explosions on the Nord Stream gas pipeline? Russian sabotage their own pipeline? Who did it and why?
I have no idea. I guess, you know, I can speculate as anybody else could on this. But it does change fundamentally, I think, a couple of things. One, it really destroys a decades-old energy policy of the Germans. At this point, obviously, the Germans will not get their gas through Nord Stream 1 or Nord Stream 2, which was their desire for decades, to have gas directly delivered from Russia and not go through Ukraine, Poland, and, you know, a bunch of other Central European countries. That's gone. That's done. It's over. Who has done it? Who knows? But it really undermines Germany's energy policy. You know, you guys mentioned Daniel Henninger's Wall Street Journal piece on climate policy and sort of international politics. I think the Germans are the energy policy that Germany has pursued has been even worse, because what they did is they pursued green policies combined with increasing dependence on cheap and abundant gas from Russia.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, you know, they built windmills and became dependent on nuclear Russia. As if the U.S. essentially put solar panels in Maine and it got dependent on oil from a nuclear Venezuela. All right? So that's the level of their energy policy.
Well, we're trying to emulate the Germans, it would seem. We came into this administration energy independent, and we've given up that description, and we're attempting, with hundreds of billions of dollars behind it, to go the way that Germany and so much of Western Europe went, which is out of their minds. That's where they went.
Yeah, and even yesterday, their Biden administration had mentioned lifting some sanctions on Venezuela to allow, I think, Chevron to exploit some oil there. Which, again, I think it's a mistake, because we have so much energy here. We have energy in Canada, one of our best allies, and we are not exploiting and using that. And we'd rather buy it from a country like Venezuela, the essentially a criminal country, and we have sanctions over it. So, you know, we're going the German direction, although, again, the lessons of the past couple months should be that the policy that the Germany pursued was abysmal and suicidal in many ways.
He is Professor Jakob Griegel, Professor of Politics at the Catholic University of America, visiting fellow at the Hoover Institution as well. Professor Griegel, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one, Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, coming this Sunday to the Base Camp Pub in Lisle. This Sunday, Base Camp Pub in Lisle, 6 to 10 p.m., the God Save America Tour. Featuring, among others, performers you've gotten to know, in part at least through our show, because we've featured their work, Bryson Gray and Alex Primetime Stein. Alex Primetime Stein, 99, Alex Primetime Stein, who has been the bane of city councils in the Lone Star State, as well as he took his act to the Hill to chase down AOC and Adam Kinzinger, have some fun at their expense. I give you a sense, if you haven't heard what Primetime Stein does at city council meetings, here's his one of his recent offerings, a tribute to Tony Fauci on the sad occasion of Fauci's announced retirement.
Next speaker is Alex Stein.
Guys, I have some terrible news. Dr. Anthony Fauci is retiring. I'm sure you heard the bad news. And it's going to be a nightmare, especially with the monkeypox epidemic. And you know who I am. I'm Primetime 99 Alex Stein. I'm the greatest city council rapper of all time. Mayor Munns, don't give me that look. Come on, smile. Give me a little smile. Give me a little smile. You know you're happy to see me. I'm on the grind all the time. I know my man Tony's here. He shares the same name as Tony Fauci. And let me tell you something, Anthony. Tony, I'm going to miss you so much. And all of us could be the victim of a serious virus. Dr. Fauci saved our life. If it wasn't for Dr. Fauci, none of us would be here. So I prepared a little something for you, Dr. Fauci. Dr. Fauci, what can I say? Dr. Fauci, you made me gay. Dr. Fauci, I love you so much. Dr. Fauci, I need to touch. Dr. Fauci, please don't leave. Dr. Fauci, I ripped out my weave. Dr. Fauci, stick it in my butt.
Oh my God.
Dr. Fauci, you made me nut. Dr. Fauci, stick the needle. Dr. Fauci, test it on a beagle. Myocarditis from the homie Titus. You saved us from the virus. And I'm always on the grind. Cause I'm number 99.
Yeah, you get the gist of it. Yeah. So he has a little bit less musical talent than our other friend, Bryson Gray, who's a little bit. I mean, I don't want to criticize Alex, but
I think he can handle it.
I think Bryson Gray is a little bit better straight up rapper than Alex Stein, but that's just my personal opinion. Bryson Gray had the number one song on U-Tunes when this bad boy came out.
Hey, let's go Brandon. I keep drawing like I'm Nick Cannon. Hey, hey, let's go Brandon. Pandemic ain't real, they just planted. Hey, hey, let's go Brandon. When you ask questions, they start banning. Hey, hey, let's go Brandon. Hey, hey, let's go Brandon. Hey, hey, let's go Brandon. I keep drawing like I'm Nick Cannon. Hey, hey, let's go Brandon. Pandemic ain't real, they just planted. Hey, hey, let's go Brandon. You ask questions, they start banning. Hey, hey, let's go Brandon. Let's go Brandon. Hey, hey.
And so they're both part of the God Save America Fest, which is coming to Lisle this Sunday, 6 to 10 p.m. at the Base Camp Pub there in Lisle. Number one, did I say U-Tunes? iTunes, right? What did I say? Did I say U-Tunes?
You made up a new format.
Yeah, it's a mashup of iTunes and YouTube. All right, gentlemen, Alex Stein, Primetime 99, comedian, YouTuber, social media star, host of The Conspiracy Castle, Bryson Gray, the most censored rapper in America. Gee, I wonder why. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me on. I just want to say I'm personally affected because I am the much better rapper. Bryson actually learned how to rap from me.
Is that right? So.
Yeah, I taught him everything he knows, so he might not admit but that's the case.
Really? It's nice that I didn't realize that Bryson, that Alex Primetime Stein was your mentor. I didn't know.
So true. I learned to rap from Alex, man. Primetime 99 on the ground.
So anybody jump in here, too, because I have a feeling you don't need much prompting. What's this God Save America Fest all about?
God Save America Fest is about bringing, because there's a lot of events that go on, but it's usually a lot of politicians talking for hours, which is nothing wrong with. You need to get their message out also. But I feel like it's a much more fun and entertaining message to get it out through music and comedy. And, of course, making it based around God. That's the center. We wanted to pit together something like that. So it's me, Tyson James, Forgiato, and Alex Stein. I don't think you can get much of a better lineup. You know what I'm saying? Bring your kids out. We lit.
It is a family-friendly event, and I also want to say this. You know, for this event, Vice is going to be covering it. They're doing a documentary on Bryson. So it's going to be insane because I don't know, Dan, Amy, if you guys saw that I confronted Tess Owens at CPAC for wearing a mask and exposing a lot of the conservatives that she was out there making fun of at the conservative event. So they're going to be there. So I have a feeling that not only is this country going to be fun for the family and, you know, entertaining, it's also going to be, I think, you know, in the culture war, it'll be a big story because once Vice gets in my face again, it's going to be on like Donkey Kong. So I really want the people in the Chicago area to be paying attention because it could be really wild.
It's going to be that on, like
there's
Donkey Kong.
There's a certain group here that's already encouraging people to call the venue, begging them to cancel your performance. Are you familiar with that? That they're doing that?
Of course. Oh, that's standard operating procedure. Yeah. I mean, Bryson deals with it. I've had my gigs canceled. I don't know if Bryson's had any canceled yet.
Yeah, I'm in Denver right now. I'm in around Denver, Colorado, and I was supposed to come here for a performance, but the venue canceled because they found out who I was.
That's amazing.
It's just unbelievable.
We're all in one big college campus now. You know, the venues are canceling entertainers, like college campuses cancel entertainers and speakers. But so what has been the response when you've been allowed to perform, you guys?
Well, we were in Nebraska, and people loved it. I mean, Bryson obviously is a real rapper. I'm just doing, you know, I'm just kind of doing the hosting gimmick. But, I mean, people love it because everything is so politically correct. And, you know, also Bryson's family friendly. He doesn't cuss. So it appeals to a lot of people. So from the events that Bryson and I have been together, and I'm not trying to pat ourselves on the back, the people have really enjoyed themselves and had a good time. Because a dad can come with their kids, their whole family. The mom, you know, it's a fun event for the whole entire family.
Did Larry the Cable Guy come to the show in Nebraska?
Well, I wish he was there. That'd be cool. I love, what is it, Dan Whitney's his name? I love Larry the Cable Guy. He's hilarious.
So the continued response you're getting is positive where you're allowed to perform. Are you being pulled into more performances? In other words, are people trying to leverage you politically, or like we've talked to you about, Alex, wanting you to come to their community to accost their city councils?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got every single weekend I'm somewhere yelling at somebody. It's almost too much. And that's the thing. No, seriously, I feel bad because people are like, oh, well, you know, come to Des Moines or come to, what, Canada. Everybody wants to come to New Zealand. Everybody wants to come somewhere. And I can only go so many places. But, yeah, I mean, the request, a lot of people want this. But it really is frustrating when these venues do bow down, all because, look, they'll say that, oh, Bryson is homophobic or transphobic, or they'll say that when that's really not the case. You know, they mislabel us, and I think that's the worst part, is that they make this fake narrative like I'm racist, or they'll call Bryson a black white supremacist, which doesn't even make sense. It's like a Dave Chappelle sketch.
Wow. So what can people expect when they come and see you this weekend?
Comedy, music, and a whole bunch of fun. By the way, Alex, I don't know if you know this, but we're performing drag queen.
Oh, yeah, for 100%. I'm performing. Yo, drag queen is our hit song. So for the people there, no, I'm ready to grind and shine. I'm bringing the whole outfit. I'm bringing my chains. I'm bringing my swag. We got one speed, full speed. So, Dan, Amy, I mean, we'd love to see you guys there. But just everybody in that area, you know, don't be afraid. I know it's a Sunday night, but it's not going to be too wild. It's definitely going to be wild, but like I said, it's perfect for the family. It's perfect for anybody. And one thing about Bryson and myself is we're really accessible. So it's not like we're going to do the event and just run away. So if you guys want pictures to hang out, talk, it's really going to be a fun event in that sense.
I'm only sorry that I don't see Cassidy Campbell, your friend down in Texas.
I know, Alex, on the
lineup.
No, now you're making me feel guilty. Now I need to drag Cassidy. But he's got that new baby, guys. That's why he's so busy. He's got a baby. Now I think that she's 8 months. He's just been so busy. But it's funny you guys say that. I just talked to Cassidy yesterday. We're like, we got to do a video this weekend. So hopefully maybe we'll have something come out on Saturday before the event. But I just want to personally thank you guys, Dan, Amy, for letting me come on and giving me a platform. And I'm sure Bryson feels the same way.
Yeah, well,
same on this way.
Yeah, well, Bryson, tell us. Did you have real musical talent? Did you start out like as a rapper, just not rapping about politics, and get pulled into this, or was this your real entree into expressing yourself musically?
Nah, I've been making music since I've been alive, and I'm not even over-exaggerating or anything. Like, since I remember my life, I've been rapping. I used to be a secular rapper. I've had songs. I had many songs on the radio. I used to be popular for making EDM music. Like, my EDM music still probably has, like, 20,000 monthly listeners on Spotify, and I haven't released a song in, like, 8 years.
Wow. And so it, what pushed you into this, political arena, effectively?
Well, where I'm from, man, I'm from the black community, man. I'm from High Point, North Carolina. So we get taught one way. But me, I've always been sort of like a researcher, things like that. So once you break out of that mindset, I don't know, man, it makes you want to talk about it, because it's like you feel like you've been tricked for so long. You got to be like loud about your belief systems now. And when I was doing that, the radio station stopped playing my music. I lost a lot of connections. My parents, who's going to be there, by the way.
Oh, awesome.
My mama called me one time and said, you can't be a political commentator and a rapper. And it irritated me. And I said, I could do whatever I want. So, yeah, I started making the music, and here we are about to perform in Loud, Illinois.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
And I want to make a quick point, too, because it's so funny, because Bryson, in his raps, he doesn't even talk about debauchery. He doesn't talk about taking fentanyl. He doesn't talk about ODing on drugs or selling drugs, but he is still considered more controversial than all these mainstream rappers that all rap about that. So it's just kind of funny. It's like the upside down world when you really look at it.
Truly. All right. So people can get tickets at Eventbrite. Obviously, where else is that? Is that the place to go to buy tickets?
No, the main place to go is gsafest.com.
gsafest.com.
Yep.
GSAFest.com. All right. That's easier. That's better. GSAFest.com is where you buy tickets. Only $35. Sunday night, this Sunday night, October 9th, at the Base Camp Pub, 5750 Lakeside Drive. That's in Lyle. They're in the near western burbs. Base Camp Pub, 6 to 10 p.m. GSAFest.com is the website to buy tickets. They're only $35. Family friendly, as they were saying. Hear some music, get some comedy. Have a nice night with the family and friends. Alex Primetime Stein, Bryson Gray, thanks so much for joining us, guys, and best of luck with the show on Sunday and the rest of the fest.
Thank you, guys. You have a rock, Dan. Amy.
Thank you. And they joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Some good news. The Biden administration is working on a national strategy. National strategy.
For what? Curing cancer? What do we got? What's the...
No, something more important. Establishing diversity, inclusion, and equity policies for the government that they hope can be used as a template for companies and other organizations throughout the country. So what happened was OPM, Office of Personnel Management, last week convened the first meeting of their Chief Diversity Officers Executive Council.
Wow.
That's an august body. A group that includes diversity officers from several federal agencies to implement and sustain work to, you know, they do the work. They're always doing the work. They will work to implement and sustain a government-wide plan for encouraging policies. Encouraging. That's what the government does, usually at the point of a gun. Encouraging policies that support diversity, inclusion, and equity, DEI policies. And accessibility, DIA. Now you got to add the A. Diversity, inclusion, equity, and accessibility in government hiring and employment. It's exciting times. You know, they'll model what they're doing, all these professional race hustlers, with, you know, what you've seen promoted by teachers' unions, both at the national level and the local level. You know, things to make your kids' education better. Like, for example, nice white parents. A look at how parents groups have systematically impacted the education system, and spoiler alert, they've impacted it negatively. Yeah. This is, yeah, teachers union. This is like the Pennsylvania State Education Association, which is, of course, a branch or a subsidiary of the NEA. Join us for a three-part series that focuses on somebody's podcast from the New York Times. To explore a key driver in what's blocking educational integration and equity. You know what it is? I'm reading this verbatim. You know what's blocking educational integration and equity?
What?
The actions of white families.
Oh, what now?
It's the honkies. It's always the honkies. Participants will engage in a pre-listening session where we'll discuss our own experiences in education, how identity affected your experience in school, if public education is working in your community, and what quote unquote nice white parents means. It means bad honkies. That's what it means. It means cut out the bad honkies from your school and then you're starting to cook with gas. Yeah. Scale this nationally, put the government stamp of approval on it, and then get the Fortune 1000 companies to follow suit, those who already haven't, and continue to press down from there. Won't that be fun? Productive. Building back better. For more on this, please be joined by Chadwick Moore, editor-in-chief at Outspoken, contributing editor at Spectator World, the author of the just-released book, So You've Been Sent to Diversity Training, Smiling Through the DEI Apocalypse. I like DEI better, but I know DEI is the proper acronym. I'll probably get sanctioned for inverting the two initials. You've been sent to diversity training, Smiling Through the DEI Apocalypse, is Chadwick Moore's new book. Chadwick, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Are you excited to hear that we've got a national strategy? We'll soon have a model protocol for DEI inculcation in every nook and cranny of America that it's not already found?
Well, I'm surprised it's taken them this long, but of course it's the federal government. If you recall, so in 2020, there was a whistleblower at Sandia National Labs in New Mexico. His name was Casey Peterson, and he really blew the lid off DEI training that was happening in federal workplaces. And President Trump learned of this, and he immediately signed an executive order putting a stop to DEI training in federal workplaces and for federal contractors.
Right.
Now, it didn't have any lasting effect. Joe Biden, on day one of his presidency, reversed that initiative. So it immediately showed that this was something very important to the Biden administration. And also that you notice around that time, these offices used to be called diversity and inclusion. They're now almost universally called diversity, equity, and inclusion. That word, and a lot of people I spoke to in my book, noticed this, that as soon as Biden won the election, their DI offices became DEI offices. And that word equity is obviously no good. It sounds very harmless. It sounds enough like equality that most people think they're interchangeable, but in fact, they're not interchangeable at all. Equity is very much about, well, basically, it's another word for socialism. It's about seizure and redistribution.
Equity and equality are antonyms, actually.
Correct.
Yeah. And now you got to add accessibility, too. We've got an A on the end of it now. Now you may have to retitle your book or put out a second volume.
Just like LGBTQ, they're going to keep adding letters to it.
Exactly. Yeah, these alphabets, they love their acronyms, and they love to add these sort of sentimentalist words to the sort of the whole program, which is what we're doing. And so what's accessibility? Diversity, equity, and inclusion, that doesn't cover enough ground. We need something called accessibility, too. What is that, universal basic income?
Right, exactly. Well, mostly just whatever they want it to be, however the wind blows. But you were right earlier to make a comparison to the teachers' union, because, you know, at first this kind of diversity stuff in the office is now ubiquitous in almost every workplace. You know, in my book, I talk to secretaries, I talk to guys on oil rigs, I talk to police officers, retail floor workers, and for almost any job you're in, you've got to go through at least one of these trainings. Sometimes you'll be at the job for 10 years before you finally sit down to take care of the training. Lord knows how you handle all that diversity in that time without your stupid little training. But at first, you know, people are saying, you know, it's sort of infantile. You're being talked down to like a kindergartner. The golden rule of treat others as you'd like to be treated is out the door. And, you know, anything you learn in these classes was sort of just stuff you picked up by being an American, living in a society with lots of different types of people. But now, and especially after the summer of our Floyd, critical race theory really stepped up into these trainings. And it became, people noticed, CRT and really hateful, wicked, immoral stuff that was being taught on the job. And the reason for that is, you know, there's many reasons, but of course one of them, particularly in industries that the Democrat Party tends to not like energy, was a way to cozy up to power, to sort of show, you know, if they need favors, if they need land leasing, things like that. Well, look what our DEI is like. We know you don't like fossil fuels and energy, but look what we're doing for diversity and inclusion. So, and there's many, many reasons why these companies are doing this, but the Biden administration, of course, it's extremely important to them for some reason.
Well, now, I don't know if you saw the movie Bros or not, but you did write about it, about the real reason straight people aren't going to see it. Did you see the movie?
No, I did not. And
is that because you're a homophobic weirdo?
We're not allowed to.
Yeah, is that, are you a homophobic weirdo? Is that why?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, he went on this tirade calling anyone who didn't see it. First of all, he said half the country isn't allowed to see it if you're a conservative or voted for Trump. He included gay conservatives in that, who he called traitors. But, you know, of course, he's an obnoxious egomaniac and doesn't seem to remember that, as, you know, 1993, the movie Philadelphia grossed $200 million. That was, of course, a gay-themed movie. The Birdcage in 1990, I believe just the following year, grossed $18 million on its opening weekend, stayed number one, you know, for 3 weeks. You know, there's dozens of big Hollywood films.
Top Gun. Top Gun was one of the most grossing.
You can't leave it alone. Was Top Gun a gay film? Yeah. Dan wants to know.
Well, I like. You know, we mentioned some of the reviews of both Billy Eichner and his film from gay art and movie critics. One, as a black queer man, I can personally tell you why I didn't go to see it in the box office, because Billy Eichner is obnoxious and corny as hell. The straights didn't go see Jiggly either. Perhaps the movie wasn't giving. You know, for example.
It's another example of the gays eating themselves, like
Can I make a joke about the Dahmer theory that's really popular right now?
he's working blue today, Chadwick Moore. But it is the whole thing. Like, it's everything is a loyalty test with these identitarians, right? If you don't see my crappy rom-com, then you're a homophobe or whatever. You know, if you don't get on board with the full panoply of identitarian initiatives, then you're whatever you're not on board with. You're a transphobe, or you're an ableist, or whatever you're not on board with. You know, it's the whole shame and incorporate, sort of shame and force into the fold.
Yeah, bullying someone to see your stupid movie, and does he actually believe you're not homophobic, or you're homophobic if you didn't see the movie? I mean, first of all, who sees rom-coms? Women, men taking women on dates. Why would straight people want to see a gay rom-com? Like, you're pitching to a very niche, tiny audience to begin with. Secondly, not
because they want to be an ally so they don't get shamed, right?
I know. Yeah, give me your ticket money. So you get the same thing, like stupid rom-com. My word. Any straight person that would see a gay rom-com in my book is pretty pathetic. Like, you know, you're not going to enjoy it. You can't relate to it. I don't think the movie would have done well anyway. But even if you just took into consideration what happened last weekend, you know, the nation's third most populous state, Florida, was crawling out from a hurricane.
Right.
They're probably not seeing movies.
No.
And the whole East Coast, it was raining all weekend, so people were staying inside. Like.
But how much did they gross? I mean, compared to how much it cost to make the movie.
It was a little over $4 million, and the movie cost about $22 million.
Ooh.
Well, if Judd Apatow takes a hit, that won't bother me. But I mean, the quality. You know, we talk about this a lot on the conservative side too. When conservatives try and get in entertainment, try to build their own castles. You know, the quality of the work product matters. You can't just say I'm going to be in entertainment and then have schlocky work product. Well, so it's the same thing here. I'm gay, so it doesn't matter how cornball and trite the script is, or how mediocre the acting is, which. That's what struck me from watching the 3-minute trailer. You know, you have to see it in order to be a good person. I mean, it's just that all of these arguments are everything is politicized. It has nothing to do with like quality of work or other considerations that are non-nefarious, you know?
Yeah, the good work would speak for itself. You wouldn't have to tell people how great it is and you need to see
right.
it and shame them into it. That's how you know it's not good.
I want to get your take on another matter, too, and that's the whole climate business, because I know you've written about this as well. I mean, this is another area that we've been talking a lot about. But President Biden, since you brought up Florida, being in Florida with DeSantis yesterday and using the occasion when DeSantis is talking about the rescue effort, the cleanup effort, all the agencies and individuals coming together to help people in need. And Joe Biden saying, well, now we know climate change is real because of Hurricane Ian, and using that opportunity to wag his finger at people like DeSantis who have a properly textured understanding of climate change and reasonable policies in response.
Right. And doesn't all evidence point to hurricanes are actually becoming less frequent over the last 100 years, that we have this slightly less frequent. I was most struck by, you know, Joe Biden doesn't really know what's going on. He can't keep up with the hot new trends or whatever. I was struck that he actually used the now forbidden term global warming when he was talking about it, which is what the left used to call climate change. Then they realized that, like, wait, people are realizing it still gets cold in winter. We got to call it something else. How about climate change? Yeah, we just blame anything on this conspiracy theory of ours. So it's interesting that he, you know, here people, you know, how many people's lives have been completely ruined. And of course, Joe Biden takes an opportunity to grandstand about climate change and hoping that that will, help them through the midterms. Like, they're still thinking that climate change and abortion is going to win them the midterms when everything else is happening around us. And you know, as much as American families are struggling at the moment, he still believes that this message is going to catch on, which, of course, it does appeal to coastal elites who are pretty sheltered from inflation and gas prices. So maybe it keeps donors funding money, but I don't think the average American, especially the average Floridian, is really thinking about that right now.
And, you know, before we let you go, congratulations on Velma coming out of the closet for Warner Brothers' new movie, Trick or Treat Scooby-Doo. It's very important to have all letters of the LGBTQIA plus alliance represented in cartoons, isn't it?
I mean, we all kind of knew it already about Velma, yeah. But why yeah. does she have to announce it? I like the subtlety that, you know, it was just assumed.
Secrets. Is she or isn't she?
Chadwick Moore, editor-in-chief at Outspoken, contributing editor, Spectator World, author of the just-released book, So You've Been Sent to Diversity Training, Smiling Through the DEI Apocalypse. Chadwick, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Time now for another reason why Dan Proft is single.
Where's the no musical bed? What is going on?
George Hoffman's in for Justin Kosick. Be patient. Baby steps. What about the...
What the hell are you talking about?
The song that
he
plays.
Have you lost your mind?
No, I haven't lost my mind. I haven't found it.
Well, you've got Secret Garden.
Secret Garden.
You've
That's
got,
what I meant to say.
Truth Hurts, jeez. Lizzo's. I put the sing in single. Nothing. Okay. Margarita Nazarenko is a life coach. She gets paid to teach women how to manipulate men in order to get what they want.
In what way?
Glad, so
sexually,
glad.
Financially, what are
I'm
we talking about?
So glad you asked. By amplifying their femininity. Sounds like a euphemism to me. If you want men to do more for you, she says, amplify your femininity. Men crave femininity and get huge fulfillment from serving feminine energy. Yeah, she says that the sexes are fundamentally different, but that's not what we're told by the identitarians. I don't know about that. Anyway, she's married to a surgeon and frequently flaunts her lifestyle on Instagram. There's three different animals that she uses to unpack female archetypes.
Okay.
You want to go through these?
Yes, I'd love to.
Yeah. The divine deer. The divine deer.
Okay.
This is sort of like the hot versus crazy matrix. The divine deer, that's where you want to be.
All right.
According to, not me.
Her.
Not a misogynist like me, Margarita Nazarenko. Life coach. Knows how to manipulate men into getting what she wants and helping women get what they want. The divine deer is the epitome of feminine energy that every woman should aspire to be. I mean, she doesn't give like details what that means. I think you have to pay for those details. If you want to be the divine deer. Second, now it gets worse from here. These other two archetypes are not good archetypes because you want to be the divine deer.
Right.
You don't want to be the overworked dairy cow.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Divine deer.
Overworked dairy cow does everything and is tired. Many women fall into this category, she says. In order to break out, females must learn to set boundaries in motherhood and share duties with their partner instead of trying to do everything and becoming an overworked dairy cow.
Janelle Bündchen. That's what she's going through with Tom Brady.
Giselle Bündchen?
What's her name? Mrs. Brady?
Giselle Bündchen. Yeah.
Giselle Bündchen?
Yeah.
She's an overworked dairy cow.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She wanted him to be home to help parent, and he wasn't. Now they're getting divorced.
That's terrible. I know.
I heard she was spotted with her ring. She was spotted without a ring on because you read page six.
I just regurgitate everything I read on page six. I couldn't see this going that way when they started to talk openly and publicly about their marital problems. Gosh, who could have seen this happening? All right. So the third category, something else you don't want to be. This is the worst.
All right. I'm ready.
The workhorse. So you got your divine deer. That's where you want to be. You don't want to be the overworked dairy cow. You need Tom Brady at home. And then the workhorse. The workhorse is a dominant masculine role that is far removed from the feminine energy that women should aspire to have.
Dan Proft would be category three, a workhorse.
Well, this is for women.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're right.
This is for have you lost the narrative already? This is women's. She says, Margarita Nazarenko, the life coach. I was in the horse archetype my whole life. She was a workhorse.
Yes.
I wanted to pay for bills, and in turn, I was chasing men who didn't want to be with me. By embracing her feminine energy, She's met the man of her dreams now, Surgeon Simon, 42.
Wow. Uh-huh. I hear he's a Taurus.
Everybody wants a Simon. She insists the word manipulate, she's got a wonderful spin on this. She should run for office. Just means influence in a skillful manner. It's not swindling a partner. It's finding a way for both parties to get what they want. And recently, Simon wanted to buy an RV, and she wanted to go to the U.S. She's in Australia. And so we ended up going on a holiday and stayed in Las Vegas, L.A., and San Francisco, and he didn't buy an RV. But he got to go to an RV convention in Las Vegas. So he got to see an RV, not buy one, and she got her trip. That's manipulating men in a skillful manner to get what you want, although the dude didn't get what he wanted. He wanted the RV, not to just look at one.
Not to look at one.
Mm. And I guess I'm running into...
Have you ever dated a workhorse?
I guess I'm running into too many workhorses and overworked dairy cows, and that's why Dan Proft is single.
All right. Thanks so much for making us part of your morning. Thanks to George Hoffman, who's in for Justin Kosick, and Quinn McCarthy. We're back here bright and early tomorrow morning, 5 a.m.,
thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.